Real College Podcast is presented by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and is a production of Radio K.
Hey, you're listening to Real College Podcast, and I'm your host, Jaka. This week, we are taking a look at the things people believe in, from religion to spirituality and much more than that. That's all coming up on this week's episode, which starts right now. Cafe Racer is a couple blocks from Matthews Park in the Seward Cafe. It's painted clean white, its door is bright red. There's an old-timey ad for ginger ale painted on the side of the building inside. Some art hangs in the seating area, local business flyers by the checkout counter. The kitchen is open behind the counter so that depending on where you sit, you can watch the chef make your food. But even in the seats away from the kitchen, you can still smell and hear everything. Cafe Racer has been serving Colombian food to Minneapolis for 5 years. The restaurant in Seward has been around for 2 years, and before that, they were a food truck that still runs when the weather is nicer.
I remember literally being laughed at by, a bank owner when I told him I wanted to put a kitchen into a FedEx truck.
That's Luis Patino, the executive chef for Cafe Racer. Emily Allen sat down with Luis this week to talk about how Cafe Racer came to be what it is now and what keeps them going.
Before Cafe Racer, Luis Patino was a corporate paralegal.
I, like a lot of people, went to college. You know, I'm an immigrant Latino that has had so many opportunities and privileges to be able to, you know, my parents brought me here when I was very young. I was about four. I speak, you know, Spanish and English fluently. I've been able to have an excellent education that allowed me to experience like what it was like to have a 9-to-5 job and realize that that might not necessarily be for me.
But he always had a special spot in his heart for serving the food he grew up with in a Colombian Minnesotan household.
I really want to be able to put my own personal culture, my spin. I'm able to bring my food that comes from 3,000 miles away to a place, to a state that is full of different types of immigrants, that has a culture of allowing and accepting immigrants here from all sorts of different places.
So in 2014, Luis quit the corporate paralegal scene and started a food truck.
So I figured out a way to, you know, put the money together for a small business loan for a food truck. I built a food truck with my best friend, with the support of my wife. It was with our own hands. It was an absolutely incredible and terrifying experience. And, you know, 2.5 years after that, I saw the opportunity to start this little kind of like corner cafe. And I you know, it was a big risk. And again, you can't do this without the people around you. You can't do this alone.
Today, the same food truck Luis built with his friends and family runs from March to November, along with the restaurant in Seward that's open year round. When both the food truck and the restaurant are up and running, there's a lot of staff.
At peak season during the summertime, when we have full food truck and catering operations, we have about 24 staff. Most are women and people of color. I am surprisingly currently the only immigrant that works for my company. But it's important for me to be able to provide an opportunity for maybe sometimes an individual that might have not had that opportunity.
When I asked Luis about the people working for him in the interview, he corrects me by saying the people he works with, as in a team. He takes pride in the staff at Cafe Racer, and he talks about the influence the chefs have had on the end product.
Most of the food on our menu is influenced by what I grew up eating every single day. But my chefs have such an influence on me and their ability to like tell me, like, no, we should try this or we should do this. Again, I cannot consider myself to be, like, knowing. I am consistently asking for their advice and their help.
Along with working on a place for the staff, Luis says Cafe Racer is for the Minneapolis community and bringing the food and culture he loves to his neighbors. About a year ago, Luis started an event for the community he refers to as Breaking Bread.
The last Monday of every single month is something that I call Breaking Bread. It's like a cultural concept in where you literally sit at a table with your friends, your family, you share a meal, you share time, you share your experiences, you share your love for each other. And that's what I wanted to create here at my restaurant, just for a little bit. and it really is like my favorite day of the of every single month. Because what happens is that you have people coming in that, number one, might not even actually know what's happening. You know, oftentimes, because we like to set it up in a way where you're actually going to get served by my staff, by my chefs. It's not going to feel like a free meal, because we're not going to tell you it's a free meal. I'm trying to actually not trick you, but Minnesotans are very proud of ourselves. We are not good at taking free things, and because we feel like we might be taking it from someone else. So in a way, the idea of telling a Minnesotan, please, welcome to our free meal. Oh, no, I'm sorry, I can't accept this. This is too gracious. No, I needed to get over that. I needed to figure out a way. So what we do is we really set it up in a way where you just come in. It's just like a regular day. And it's what it is. It's you're able to come in, sit down and have an experience that at the end of it, you're like, oh, you know what? We're ready for our bill. And like, oh, no, it's all this today. Today is free.
When asked about what keeps him going, what inspires Luis, he chose not to talk about inspiration, but discipline.
So for me, I go with discipline. And not just because, and oftentimes that might just be my culture. Maybe the fact that my parents sent me to a military school for high school, that could have been part of it. But discipline oftentimes helps me a lot in that I do the things that I don't want to do now. So they're easier later on. Owning a business isn't like being always inspired. It's realizing that you have a responsibility to other people, to your community, to your product, to your brand, and being disciplined to, when you're not inspired, to get up and do the things that you need to do for the people around you.
For Radio K's Real College Podcast, I'm Emily Allen.
There are a lot of ideas surrounding what is accepted and normal when it comes to what you believe in. When it comes to knowledge, things that are spiritual and magical tend to get looked down upon. The future in Minneapolis offers a space where people can have those things be celebrated. Elizabeth Yost has a story.
In South Minneapolis, there's a place not a lot of people have heard of. Made up of businesses, creative spaces, tattoo parlors, art galleries, even a yoga studio. It's called the Witch District. And not metaphorically. Believing, practicing witches own and operate a lot of these spaces.
I put a spell on you.
My name is Lacey Perpich Headkey. I'm head witch in charge at the Future, selling a lot of local artists and magical supplies and witchy wares and art by women, queer, and trans folks. And then the big room that's in the middle of the space has a library space and then a big table in the middle that's for workshops and talks. There's a full kitchen, so we've done a couple of dinners here. It's my studio, and then soon to be a print shop. And then the back, smaller room is the artist residency space. And when there's not an artist in there, we'll have tarot readings or astrology readings, and it's a more private space for healings and readings.
The artist residency that Lacey offers is a one-week program for working witches looking for a space to create something new and magical.
So the idea is, I put it out there just for anyone working with healing, witchery, weirdos. So it doesn't have to be a visual artist. There's been a lot of people working on print projects or zines. So while they're here, they have that backspace to use to work on whatever project they want. And they can also use this space, the middle kind of bigger workshop space. And then they offer some sort of public component. So there's been talks and readings, seances. And I wanted to provide a place where people can just like make it their own. I have this space. I wasn't going to use it every day. And so I thought that it would be a good way to like share that space with someone who can do something cool. And it also gets people coming in and interacting with the neighborhood that might not otherwise come here. And then it gets people from out of town interacting with our city and expanding the network across the country.
This witchy networking aspect of the future is really important to Lacey. Building connections between people practicing alternative religions and figuring out their spirituality is part of what inspired the future's creation.
So I started this space because I'm a spiritualist, so that's a religion of talking to spirits, and I had a strong community when I lived in Boston. There's a spiritualist church, and I went to school to learn to be a medium and a spiritual healer. And then when I moved back here, there just wasn't that community. And so I started kind of fantasizing about like a DIY space that brings together people who are into spiritualism or witchcraft or whatever that means, or just like people who are interested in those things and maybe aren't even into it yet, or that just want to support local artists. I would say that a lot of people have been coming in and are really excited about this space because I wanted it to feel more like a community center, so you can come here and you can shop, which all of the money from the shop goes back into supporting the space, or you can just come hang out, read the things in the library, come to an event that we're putting on, or come to an event that the artists in residence are doing, and it's been a good place for like people just coming in and hanging out and like talking to people around this table. Not that this is a church, but it like becomes a place where people can do ritual or get together and like define what that is.
Lacey's commitment to the future as a magical community building space becomes really evident when you talk to the other people that come in looking for magical supplies and local art, which at the future tend to be the same thing.
I just moved to the neighborhood and I've walked by and thought it looked so awesome. Like I saw the tote bags about ghosts and seances and I saw all the interesting tarot. These aren't, which I have a lot of like the standard tarot decks that you find online or in stores, and these ones are all different. They're different than what you find. So this one, the artwork looks super cool.
Yeah.
I do tarot, but I've also been like into Wicca and ceremonial magic and just sort of witchcraft in general since I was probably 13. I was 13 when I started doing tarot.
Okay.
And I'm 37 now. So, I go through phases where I'm interested in one aspect or another, and something that always sticks with me is tarot, but like sometimes I'll be into doing like Wicca spells with herbs or like little rituals or like little affirmation stuff, candle burning rituals. You know, there's just so many different things you can get into.
The close-knit, supportive element of the witch community, even between witches that don't know each other, became really evident when this customer and Lacey started having an in-depth conversation about a specific deck of tarot cards.
So she doesn't have pictures of the cards, but you can kind of get a sense of what her aesthetic is like. So like this is kind of what, like this is her drawing and color style. It's like kind of bonkers.
It looks really cool. Do you know if the minor arcana are like, are they just the symbol or is it like a picture like Rider Waite? Like a scene?
Let me look.
Okay.
I'm trying to find something.
Evidence of such a strong community is seen in these little interactions, and also how Lacey talks about the difference between what she experiences now versus when she first opened the future.
When I first opened the space, I was like, well, I signed a 2-year lease. What if no one comes? What if not one single person comes in the door? And now it's like, oh, there's a lot of people that are so psyched and just like want to talk about their ideas or their art, or be like, ooh, I didn't know there was a place like this. Well, like Big Mouth Tarot does tarot readings here pretty regularly, and we're going to start doing some Reiki healing, which I think is just going to be like on a donation basis, and then all that money will go to like some nonprofit. And I think we're going to start doing astrology readings. I've done some rituals here that was part of a project I work on with a collaborator who lives in Boston where we do ectoplasm photos. So we did kind of like a New Year manifestation here.
If all of this sounds a little too weird for you, I get it. I didn't know a lot about witchcraft before I started working on this story, but now I understand the elements of spirituality, religion, following the golden rule like we would in any other belief system. And Lacey has a really empowering view of what it means to be a witch.
Obviously, witches have different connotations attached to them. And I mean, in some ways, I mean, people are still afraid of women who have power or who don't meet other people or who are making things happen for themselves, whether or not they call themselves a witch or not.
I think this is what makes the Witch District so fascinating to me. Taking a pejorative term used against women for centuries, turning it into a positive, supportive community, is really amazing. Wishing you a truly magical day from Real College Podcast, I'm Elizabeth Yost.
People gravitate towards various belief systems for all sorts of reasons. For comfort, for safety, to feel like they fit in. And sometimes these belief systems we move towards have impacts that affect our lives for a really long time. Alex Schumacher has a profile looking at this very issue.
So my full name is Evan Johnson Boyce. My full name literally means young warrior, son of John, servant or lad. My name could have been young warrior, son of John, who lives by the wood. It could have almost been something really epic, and I could have sounded like a Lord of the Rings character or something, or some. But it turned out to be, like, wah, wah, wah. I don't know. It kind of works better. Kind of fits my life.
To Evan, it seems, his life is not epic. But who among us thinks of our lives that way? For Evan, the battle he'd face wasn't external, but rather internal. The first actor in this battle was religion.
I was very religious when I was younger. I was brought up Lutheran, ELCA. It was very progressive. Every Sunday, we went to church, all of that. I believed, I never really questioned until I got much older.
The other actor besides religion was Evan's sexuality, which at the age of 13 took the form of a boy named John, who Evan had grown up with.
Basically, we were each other's first gay romantic encounter or whatever. He's the one who got me to start doing musicals and stuff in high school.
And it was these musicals and other activities that proved to be Evan's ticket out of feeling like he was just a kid no one paid any attention to. Sophomore year, Evan got into his school's show choir, which was considered highly prestigious.
All of a sudden, it was like I was somebody, and my classmates were looking at me like I was somebody, and it's like, oh, he can sing, he can act, he's a contender now.
And it was this feeling of finally being accepted that mixed with Evan's faith and sexuality and kicked off his internal struggle. The starting point for this battle took place after Evan broke down crying to his mom on the way to a singing lesson because John, the boy he liked, had gotten the lead in the musical over him. Evan recovered, though, and the two kept driving.
As we were driving there was a rainbow, and my mom was like, look, that's a sign that you're going to be okay. And I, for some reason, I don't know, I decided at that point it was like, Jesus loves me, therefore nobody can be against me. It was like this weird born-again experience that I had. Ironically, shortly after that, that was the thing that allowed me to come out. And at that time, I started telling my friends that I was bisexual.
Around the same time, Evan began spending more time with a friend who went to a more conservative church. Evan went to some of their youth groups and found that the boys there didn't question his sexuality. They didn't think he was gay because to them, being gay was a sin. And for the first time in his life, Evan felt like one of the guys, and he latched on to this feeling.
I really embraced the ability to say, I was like, oh, maybe I don't have to be gay. I can be, quote unquote, normal. And if anybody ever questions, I can say, well, I'm a Christian. I don't believe in that. I used it as a way to hide from my own sexuality.
As the thought that he could hide himself behind religion grew, Evan confronted John about his feelings and told John that he loved him. John, in turn, told him that he was leaving next year to go to an arts high school in Golden Valley.
So that was kind of sad, but it was also, it kind of played right into my narrative of God doesn't want me to be gay, so he's taking away the one person who's my temptation.
Junior year came, and with John gone, Evan began dating a girl and embraced the belief that he had cured himself of being gay. As junior year drew to a close, John returned, though, to direct a play for the community theater that summer.
I had this inflated ego. I was like, John's going to see that I'm this Christian and that God has cured me and that I'm straight and that I don't need him.
But like many things in life, that's not what happened. Evan and his girlfriend Holly broke up, and things only got more confusing from there.
Holly and I broke up but kept on fooling around, and then John and I started fooling around again, and it just became this whole ball of tangled confusion. And Holly also, ironically, was going to the arts high, gonna be going to the arts high school too, where John was going. So at the end of this summer, I was so spiritually confused. John and Holly both went off to the same school, and I was left with nobody.
After getting as tangled up in himself as he did, all Evan could do afterwards was try to undo the mess. Something that can take years. Evan went to college, jumped in and out of the closet, continued struggling with religion, and finally, in his mid-20s, began seeing a therapist. Now openly gay and in his 30s, Evan still has a fascination with religion, but it's taken up a more healthy place in his identity.
My favorite book to this day is Karen Armstrong, A History of God. But that book kind of saved my life, and it made me look at Christianity in a completely new way, and just religion in general. I realize I have this passion for the study of religion myself, but I'm, even though I don't affiliate with any religion or creed.
Reporting for Real College Podcast, that was Alex Schumacher. If you walk around the University of Minnesota, you'll likely encounter people that are yelling at students about what they believe in. Most of us, including myself, just walk past and don't say a thing. Nathan Fervoy decided to stop and hear these people out.
Among the most peculiar characteristics of life on campus is the dozens of promotions, advertisements, corporations, scams, religious institutions, campaigns, and motivated individuals who set up shop along the most trafficked corridors of school, hoping to snag a wandering student's attention. For those selling something, a mass of impressionable young people this large is the perfect place to recruit a lifelong customer. Of everyone that descends upon the students, the most unique voices are surely those of individual people like Parnell, a campus minister who can be found most days talking to students and handing out pamphlets regarding Christianity.
And so I'm an advisor to several student groups on campus that are Christian motivated, and our mission among the finer details is to introduce people to Jesus Christ and to the Bible and to the saving message.
Parnell is perhaps most infamously known for passing out the Myth of Evolution flyers at certain points in the year, though it is only a portion of his mission.
I think it was
another controversial figure on campus this year is Jonathan. Jonathan is younger and a bit more extravagant than Parnell, often carrying signs boasting a myriad of conspiracy theories.
Yeah, could you read the one that you have with you right now and then just like talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the one I got right now is it says fluoride causes cancer.
The messages these men are attempting to spread are far outside the norm and clearly are not accepted by the vast majority of students they speak to. Yet day after day, they continue to preach. Regardless of my opinion of their opinions, I had to admire their resilience and grit, returning to campus again and again, even after days of no visible progress.
I mean, the majority of people I talk to don't respond to the message and treat it like it's, you know, that's nice for you kind of a thing, or worse. But, you know, when I take that back to the Lord and say, you know, you want me to go somewhere else, do something else, I feel like the Lord's saying, no, I want you to stay where you're at, so.
when one single bit of negativity can dissuade me from ever trying something again. I can't help but wonder what thought processes allow one to be so committed to a cause.
It upsets me, mm-hmm. and other times I just really couldn't care. But I feel like it's always worth it. I think that, you know, even if I get a disagreement, then at least I can sort of bring the topic into their mind, and maybe they research it more and change their mind later, or maybe they're more willing to talk about it mm-hmm. with other people, or maybe they'll badmouth me to other people mm-hmm. behind my back, and whoever they say it disagrees with them, and then I've informed someone through a third party. So
my work is an action of faith. You know, it's like I'm called to obey the Lord and to discharge the mission that He's given me. And apparently that mission is a lot about sowing and not a lot about reaping. A lot of, you know, in a sense, in farmer terms, it's, you know, we're working the ground, we're planting the seeds, we're watering the soil, not a lot of seeing the increase or the harvest. So no, I don't see a lot of people respond to the message and become believers from start to finish. But I believe that, I mean, they say that, you know, someone has to hear the good news about Jesus Christ potentially up to seven times before they take action on it. And so sometimes I'm the first person.
I also wonder, how did you get here, as I talked to Jonathan and Parnell? What influenced you to wake up one morning and decide to stand up in front of thousands of people who will all almost certainly chastise you? To this, their answers were simple, similar, and eerily familiar.
Coming to school, dealt with a lot of depression, you know, kind of a lot of anxiety, kind of trying to suddenly be responsible,
yeah.
You know, and thinking I got to know it all, but finding out that I don't know that much, you know. So I kind of went through my junior year, you know, making friends and still partying a little bit and doing all right in school, but kind of like, what's my purpose in life, mm-hmm. you know? But I think I put two and two together and realized that I'm an average guy as far as my skills and intellect. And I was thinking to myself, you know, am I going to succeed in this world, or, you know, should I begin to look for something deeper, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I was just searching, and then I met a guy in Kaufman who had a quiz, you know, back then they could give away pop, you know, so answer the quiz, get a free pop, you know, mm-hmm. what are the five religions of the world? And so I answered them, got a pop, and the guy started asking me questions about spiritual life, you know, do you believe in God, you know, do you believe in the Bible, do you have a relationship with God, you know, and never had those conversations before, so I said, well, I believe in God. I don't believe in Jesus Christ. I believe the Bible is written by men and is full of contradictions, you know. And he said, well, you ever read the Bible, you know? And I was like, well, no. He's like, well, would you like to?
There was actually also a preacher I should mention. His name is Mike. I want to say his name is Mike, but when I was in college, this guy would stand outside Walter Library mm-hmm. and he would stand on like a chair or something and he would just read from the Bible page after page.
Mm-hmm.
I think if it wasn't for him, I would have forgotten. I would have been really lost without him, without wow. just that guy reading the Bible every day. Like, he kept the thought of, he kept my relation, he kept God in my mind, I guess you could say.
Yeah, yeah.
After I graduated and came back, I've seen him like in Dinkytown a few times. I went up and I told him, you know, how much, like, seeing him read the Bible to while I was in college helped me, I guess. It was inspired me, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like I want to inspire others in the same way.
Both Parnell and Jonathan are here on campus because this is the model that was handed down to them. For assurance that what they are doing is having an impact, they need not look farther than themselves. Both learned of what they now preach as students very much like those they now preach to. And so by continuing in place of the preachers that inspired them, they will likely pass the baton down to the next generation. In this sea of many thousands of impressionable young adults searching for answers, Only one has to take the bait for the cycle to continue.
Well, there's like four things that I want everyone to know. I'm telling everybody anyways. It's that fluoride causes cancer. There's fluoride in our water. And the Earth is not a spinning ball. Evolution is a lie, an intentional lie. And that God is real. And the Federal Reserve is a private bank. And it's corrupting our country.
Cool. Yeah, all right. Thank you, Jonathan, for talking with me.
My pleasure.
Radio K, Real College Podcast.
That's it for this week's episode of Real College Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. You can hear all of our episodes at radiok.org/realcollegepodcast. You can also subscribe on iTunes, leave a rating, all that good stuff. Real College Podcast is a production of Radio K. It's produced by Alex Schumacher, Emily Allen, and Liv Riggins. I'm your host and managing editor, Jacob Maldonado Medina. Thank you for listening, and tune in every Monday at 6:30 for more arts and culture coverage.